Think of a time when you experienced a conversation that left you with a new perspective, or perhaps an inquiry, or you might have felt that something has shifted in you after that conversation. Maybe it helped you gain a new level of clarity, or moved you to take action. That was a coaching conversation. Welcome to the Cooking Conversation. This is your host, Salah Lee, and I'm here with Lisa Atkins. Lisa, welcome.
Thank you. I think I just giggled all over your introduction there. Sorry.
Yeah.
just tickled to be here.
I am honored to have you. I've been thinking about this conversation since we scheduled it, and usually I have like a few questions set up, but mainly just a lot of improvisation on what emerges during the conversation.
Yeah, that'll work. So emergence is fine with me, and I would love it if we could just take a moment, each of us, to check in and see where we are and see if that gives us a starting point, not only for content, but also what would make this podcast experience great for both of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
So both of those aspects. Yeah. So today is a really special day. So I'm coming to you with a lot of energy and a sense of, but definitely accomplishment. Because this morning at 3:30 a.m., I was the last morning. Well, I have to wake up a couple more mornings really early, but it's the last day of recording the chapters of the Coaching Agile Teams audiobook. So this was the last chapter.
Woohoo! Yeah, that's awesome. I have been following your updates on LinkedIn, and this is one of the books that inspired me on this coaching journey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, along with the Coaching Agile Teams workshop that you've done for a while, and I think I was part of the very first group of people.
Early,
2013 or something. Some time ago.
So it's a big. So I'm just coming to this podcast with a lot of energy about that, but also honestly a little bit tired because I've taken two short naps today, but I have been up since about 3:30 a.m. So you know, maybe you want to bring that in a little bit. I've been having some thoughts about not only the content in that book, but also the things that have been occurring in my own professional development in these last couple months since the COVID pandemic happened to us all that are probably not unrelated, and I haven't actually connected them up yet, and so maybe talking with you about them would be really useful for me as well as hopefully whoever's listening.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm thinking. I usually ask, first question I go with this: what brought you here? Like, what brought you to coaching? What's it about for you?
Okay, cool. So, but yeah, we can do that.
Yeah,
I'll put myself in your hands. Just whatever you normally do is okay with me in this conversation.
Yeah. So this is usually a dialogue. I mean, it's not me interviewing you one way, but you know, just having a conversation. You can ask me questions. I'll ask you questions, and hopefully, this will provide a rich conversation for everyone.
Yeah, good.
And leave us with something to think about, because that's my the tagline at the end of the podcast. Is I hope this give you something to think about or take action on. So hopefully, that will be the case.
I love that. I like how it follows the arc of the coaching conversation. You want people to have some sort of action by the end, or at least a thought piece. And so, okay, let's see if we can deliver that, Salah. I like that.
Yeah, awesome. So you've been in this space for a long time, and I think you were one of the pioneers inspiring this, bringing professional coaching to agile space, to agile practitioners. And I certainly learned a lot from you and from your writing and journey. For anyone who's not familiar with your work, how did you get to this point?
Well, 10 years ago, almost to the day, so late May 2010, the Coaching Agile Teams book, which I wrote in 2009, was published. And so that was sort of the retelling of my journey of becoming an agile coach and all the useful things I found along the way, including professional coaching and other things. And so that sort of took off for a 10-year trajectory for me, where my mission was really clear. I mean, it was to help emerge the profession of agile coaching, because I saw that there was such possibility for agile coaches as change agents inside of organizations, and to help this change that was trying to bubble up in so many places. And so that's what it's really been about for the last 10 years. And so here we are in 2020, and the next arc is about to start for me personally, but the arc of agile coaching and continuing that profession and continuing to advance the art of that profession continues many, many dozens of people who've come in and are sort of carrying that ball now.
Yeah, it's
it's definitely, you know, a continuous journey. It's you know, something that doesn't end. It's a constant learning process. So speaking of that learning process, you wrote the book 2009, right? And now that next chapter is you're actually doing this, recording the book in the audio format. So how's that been like?
Well, I sort of want to tell you why I decided to do it, because it seems sort of strange. Why would you record a 10-year-old book as an audiobook? What happened was that I got the statement of royalties. I get it twice a year, and it comes, I think it was like in late January or February, for the period of June through January last year. And I noticed an interesting thing. The Coaching Agile Teams book has sold about 50,000 copies in English around the world. We don't really know how many in other languages, but so a lot. But 5,000 copies were sold in that 6-month period. And I'm like, okay, this is a 10-year-old book. Why is it that there is so much interest in this book? People keep buying it. At the same time, we kept getting lots of requests to translate the book to other languages. And so I just sort of took the hint that the world is not done with this book. The world is not done with me with this book. So I asked the publisher, you know, by now we're in early March, mid-March maybe, and, you know, the pandemic is sort of heating up. And I thought, wow, what am I going to do with my time, being that 95% of my work has just disappeared overnight now that I have this space? And then when I got that information about the number of copies sold and the impact it's been having for the whole time, I'm like, well, maybe this is a good pandemic project.
So it sounds like you noticed a need for the book in a different format.
Yeah.
But also it's like, it sounds to me like it's also like a learning experience for you as well. So what have you learned from recording the book in audio format versus writing it?
There's stuff on the content level that I've learned or become reacquainted with. But there's also just stuff about recording an audiobook that has been super fun for me to dive into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a whole new world I had never been in before. So like, how to be a good narrator, you know, what are the mechanics of how you get ready before you sit down and record? How long can you record for a certain period of time? You're like, how beautiful it is that, I don't know if you know this, and maybe not everyone does this, but it was a suggestion to me to mark up the text like music.
Mm.
Now, I'm a vocalist, so I'm used to marking up music. And it's just been so beautiful to, like, here's where the breath goes. Here's the important word. Here's how this sentence moves to the next and the next and the next and then gets quiet again.
Mm.
You know, and so that has been a new level of learning for me about honestly the beauty of the spoken word and how it can liven a text.
Yeah, it's funny. I was watching this show the other day with my kids called Brain Games. They were talking about the language, like how you can convey so much with voice, and it's still a creative process, right? So writing a book is a creative process. There's a lot of editing and placing things the different ways around, but also when you're doing the audio, there's still a lot of creative work that needs to happen.
Yeah, and I didn't know how much. I mean, so
yeah.
I learned a lot along the way. Like, for example, in recording an audiobook, you are also the listener's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So things, I hadn't realized how many visual cues make sense of a text on a printed page. And without that set of visual cues that each person is getting individually, you have to sort of maybe say things in a different order or create a link between things or create a lot of space so that people know, oh, we're not in the main text anymore. Now we're in an aside. Oh, and now we're coming back to the main text.
Yeah.
You know, these things that you just would take for granted on a written page.
Yeah. You mentioned this is the project that you started as the pandemic, and you're trying to start this project and fill a need for others, but also kind of learn a different way of conveying the information in the book. But even like when you're describing the how the sound and how to record, it feels like also a metaphor for the situation we're in. Like there's some words that maybe it needs to be emphasized, or maybe some areas in the book you might slow down or take a pause or take a breath and continue. So does that resonate?
You know, it does. Actually, what your words are making me do is slow down a bit. And that's actually one of the main messages, I think, of this book. As I look at like the big themes that run through this book, one of them is slow down so that you can notice what is trying to happen versus what you want to happen, or perhaps you're already trying to force to happen. And so in that vein, I think it's important for us to locate ourselves in time and place right now. We are mid-pandemic. It's the middle of July. I think it's almost hubris to say mid-pandemic, like as if I know that we're halfway through or something. I don't, but people keep talking about post-pandemic, and that feels pretty far off to me, honestly. And so I just want to like lock us in on where we are, that, you know, at this moment, the best information we have says that 586,750 people have lost their lives to this coronavirus. And there are over 3.5 million cases in the United States right now, and closing in on 140,000 deaths in the United States. And that represents a lot to be with and a lot worth pausing for.
Yeah, there is a lot to process. And I've been trying to find what's going on. And like you said, that there's a loss, sense of loss. We feel that, every day. I was reading an article that was published recently, or maybe in the beginning of the pandemic, and someone was talking about the grief that we're feeling. And sometimes we don't really know what we're feeling. It's just, it's very hard when things are so rapidly changing. There's a lot of emotions. Mm-hmm. We're lost for words. We don't know what to say. Sometimes, like you said, slowing down and just being with it can be the way to process these emotions, or find out what are we feeling, or how are we feeling.
Yeah, and to allow ourselves to go into the depths, and sort of like almost in a circular motion to go deeper into the experience. My belief is there are some treasures and gems in that will inform a more creative response, a more appropriate action, and something that moves us more toward goodness, truth, and beauty than just doing a bunch of stuff, you know? Yeah. And so as you're saying this, you're making me realize, it's so funny how oftentimes circumstances will conspire to bring different things to my attention or put me in certain situations, and I don't recognize the connection between them until afterwards. Mm. And that's what's happening in this moment. So you mentioned loss and sorrow. And I take Zen lessons on Saturday mornings. And it was in one of these lessons that there's a bunch of people in my Zen Sangha who are hospital workers, trauma workers, that sort of thing. And we brought it up that, we don't have very good skills, exactly as you say, for like, how do we even language the immensity of what we're feeling. A book was recommended to me that I'm actually doing a little two-person book club on right now, with Martin Kearns, who's also in the Agile community. So he and I get together on Sunday nights and we talk about each chapter in this book. And it's called The Wild Edge of Sorrow by Francis Weller. And it's exactly about, as this author says, entering into an apprenticeship with sorrow, loss, and grief. And there are cultures on our planet that do a great job of recognizing and metabolizing sorrow, loss, and grief, but not the Western cultures that I grew up in. We don't do a good job. We just try to push it down, ignore it, whatever. Move on, chuck and jive, make something new, and I think at some point it'll catch up with all of us.
Yeah, it's something that I think everyone struggles with. I personally do. I feel like, I try to move on quickly, but then it's almost like, you move on quickly and you're not paying attention. And like you said, it catches up at some point. Yeah. So sometimes it's better to slow down, take a step back to go, two steps forward. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's not something that we do on a personal level, and certainly not at the organizational level when we, when we work with teams. Like it's almost feel to me like everything, happened, and then companies or organizations just went online and it was business as usual. There was no time for processing things or just talking about how this is impacting everyone's life and productivity or, whatever the situation they're in. That same article that I mentioned about grief is also mentioned about how people process grief differently and at different levels and at different speeds. So not everyone can just keep going. There's some pause that needs to happen, some slowing down.
Yeah, and there's also it's such unfamiliar terrain, and people do process grief differently. That's one of the things I'm learning in this book. And yet it's just not as bad as we think. So like everything else in life, this is a really natural part of life. Civilization has been through times like this before. And there's a certain way, like we know what to do. And there are actual skills and attitudes and rituals and things that you can pick up to process grief and loss and suffering, you know, maybe like exactly like we pick up tools and rituals and stuff to help people process work.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that we don't enter it very often. And I think we're sort of afraid of it, like it's going to completely consume us if we let any little bit of it in. And maybe this is what I'm getting tenderized for. I have the sense that I'm like this piece of meat and I'm getting tenderized for something new and I have no clue what that is. But it's this book club. It's the fact that I signed up for a somatic coaching course online called The Power of Embodied Transformation. And at the same time, I have really increased my feminine movement practice, which is a way of metabolizing and processing emotions without having to logic it out. So like those things together go together. And I have no idea, as I say, like the universe has conspired to bring these things into my life at the same time. I didn't realize when I was signing up visual things that it happened this way. But what I'm learning is that this actually, all of those things are well-known terrain for some people. Mm-hmm. There are guides out there. It's not like that we're totally in the wilderness. And so maybe it's just we need to contextualize it for some of our situations.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sometimes, you know, pausing and just slowing down can help us do that. And like you said, it's back to the, you know, what brought this up was how you're finding that when you're recording the book, you're slowing down in some areas and you're kind of maybe speeding up in other areas, mm-hmm. Emphasizing on in some places. So yeah, you're trying to figure it out. It's all like sense making. Try and make sense of everything, but it's hard to make sense of everything, you know, without having some sort of collective approach to addressing it together. I mean, some sort of like people are processing this together. You can't process these things on your own. It doesn't, I don't think it works, because it's hard to just to process it on your own.
Yeah. The chapter I just read in The Wild Edge of Sorrow is about both of the last chapter I just read was about processing in solitude, and the previous one was processing.
Mm.
And that both are really good. You know, I really haven't processed grief and loss, because it's just not something that has happened in my experience thus far. But that's just because of where I was born and who I was born to. There are cultures on this planet right now, living right now and acting right now, that do process loss and grief and suffering really well, so that it doesn't hang over them and on them for a long time. We have a lot to learn from them.
That's a good distinction. They're both needed, solitude and mm-hmm. community. And I guess my question that's coming up for me is like, how do you know when to do which? Like I think it depends on the person, but sometimes you go into that solitude and you just
recycling it.
Yeah, you keep going into it, like linger, mm-hmm. and then you want to connect with others in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Or, mm-hmm. And then by that time, you just feel like, okay, you've been detached for so long, it's hard to get back in.
Mm-hmm, yeah. I think that the answer is variable, varies from moment to moment, even within a person. Of course, as you just said, there's sort of like a relationship or a dance between community and solitude. And I think that you'd have to stop moving at such a frenetic pace to listen in to see which one is being asked for right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I see a lot of frenetic activity out there. I mean, as you said, how we all just like, boom, went online.
Yeah.
You know, and like all of a sudden everyone's classes are virtual. All of a sudden there are all these other virtual offerings. There's all these community meetings. There's like, is overwhelming. And I think that some of that activity, certainly not all of it, at least some of that activity is actually a distraction. We don't want to look at the fact that we are in the biggest health crisis, perhaps, of human civilization.
Yeah, I definitely see that as well. It's like everything moved virtual online, and then now you're like, you have all these things. We didn't even take a pause to process what happened.
Right.
And what happened. And then, like you said, it just like keep busy so that you don't have to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But then it lingers and it just, it's not sustainable. At some point, you just get worn out or you're going to have to slow down no matter or what.
Yeah.
It will catch up with you, as I said earlier.
Well, I prognosticate that we are going to have no choice but to pay attention to it, because I'm sorry to say that I look out in the future and I don't see a really rosy situation for us. I mean, maybe not even for quite a while, especially in the United States. I mean, we are likely to see the breakdown of a lot of systems that we take for granted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, food supply chain, for example, maybe even economic systems like banking, things that we think are rock solid, you know, maybe they're not. And I mean, we have not even started, not even got the first inkling of how bad this really is economically for the U.S. and how many people are going to be homeless, for example. The number of evictions that are occurring in the United States right now is mind-boggling. And were it not for the pandemic and not for people not being able to do the work they want to do, these people would still be housed. So holy moly, what's going to happen when people who typically have stable housing are now on the street with their kids?
Yeah.
When my mind goes there. So this is why I started reading that book, The Wild Edge of Sorrow, because when my mind goes there, I just get so despondent, like just the pit of despair, you know? And when I think about it and when I try to distract myself from that, I think about Princess Bride and the... the pit of despair. Yeah. I laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is. It's hard to fathom what's next.
Mm-hmm.
Which I know from our coaching training, like through CoActive and other professional coaching programs and the leadership program is, and many other traditions, is like there's this how to be present in the moment. Mm-hmm. Try to get more centered around today and now. Because again, it's very, like you said, that you can quickly go into despair if you think about what's going to happen next, and mm-hmm. Based on what you see, you start to project that, you know, to mm-hmm. like the future. Okay, this is gonna get worse. So what do you see as some ways to kind of bring us back to the moment, or bring yourself mm-hmm. back to the present?
There are a couple practices that we're doing as a family, actually, because of the pandemic, my 22-year-old and her boyfriend are living in our basement. So we are now two couples in this house, and that is a whole new dynamic and a really wonderful one. But you know, a lot to navigate. I mean, no one planned this. And one of the things we help each other do is recognize when one of us is catastrophizing. So one of my two top strengths finder strengths are connectedness and futuristic. Okay, good things to have in general, but for right now, those two strengths sometimes are not that healthy for me, because I do my mind moves into the future very easily, and I can actually see like really big swaths of time. I think very futuristically. And my family goes, okay, reel it back. Just reel it back in. You don't know that all that's going to happen. And so we've been saying to each other recently, like, so what are the common sense, no nonsense things we would do
mm-hmm.
if we weren't assuming all that bad stuff was going to happen, but we don't want to be caught out in the rain either.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like a simple thing, like we bought a deep freeze. Okay. I've been wanting to have a deep freezer for a while now. It's not like a ridiculous thing to buy a deep freezer, although I'm not the only one thinking about it, because it was hard to find one.
Yeah.
So what is the like a common sense thing that I would do that's not buying into the catastrophizing, but also not ignoring the fact that shit's falling apart?
Yeah.
You know, both are true.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's really this idea of trying to hold, or the paradox, you know, to hold two maybe contradictory ideas in the same, you know, the same time, and not let one weigh more than the other.
Yeah.
Because like you said, if you just focus on what's going to happen and all the things based on, you know, what you're seeing today and taking that futuristic look, then that's a cause of despair, a cause of being stuck. And if you don't really do anything and just nothing is going to, you know, this is just going to go away and nothing will change, then we'll go back to business as usual, then you're not really prepared. So there's this, yeah, sort of balance between preparing for what might happen, but not panic.
Yeah.
At the same time.
And making it really no nonsense has been helpful. You know, we've just had my daughter and I in particular have had some just really no nonsense conversations about, you know, how do we want to, you know, what simple things could we do now that would have us feel a sense of security and be commendable.
Mm.
And there is something about our practices as a family too that I think are important to highlight. Not all of us in our family have a meditation practice, but two out of the four of us do. And it's enough to sort of keep the others upheld too. And so my daughter and I both have strong meditation practices in our lives now, and I have stepped up my meditation pandemic. I now sit 45 minutes on, you know, 6 out of 7 days. And that has helped a lot just to continue to, number one, stay in the present moment and not move to that future panic. But number two, also encounter the joy that is actually here in the present moment. Mm. I said to myself, what if the world goes to hell? I would hate to look back and say, wow, I squandered that summer with my daughter. Mm. That would be like a really, you know, like that would really suck. That would be double bad.
Yeah. I know it's hard to find any good things with what's happening, but sometimes that's the only way to move forward is to find out what's here now. Mm-hmm. What's the sure. gift in the moment right now? Like you said, time with your daughter or my kids and trying to spend more time. And it's hard because you're constantly going to your head or trying to figure things out, make sense of what's happening, okay, and what's going to happen next, and at the same time, okay, no, I need to be here mm-hmm. in this moment and not worry too much about what's going to happen.
I think what you're alluding to and what you're making me think about is the beauty of some of the belief system behind these coaching conversations. Mm. And one of them is that there's learning in everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's not so much like, oh my gosh, why did this happen to me? Of course your clients can come to you or you can yourself be in that situation. But the coaching conversation shifts it to be, as you said, okay, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. What's here now that's actually good? I mean, I can name a whole bunch of things. I have really stepped on my gratitude practice in this time period too, to remind myself of how incredibly privileged and how many amazingly good things I have going on that do provide that well of resilience for when things feel a little bit off kilter, you know, because there's always a creative response to anything. And human beings have been through times like this, maybe not exactly this, but, you know, pretty bleak times.
Yeah. There's always going to be the external stuff, like, you know, things that we can't really control or maybe even influence. And there's always things that we can control internally, at least we're looking through a different lens to find out what's a different perspective that we can look at, or what's a gift, or, you know, maybe that the gift that you alluded to earlier is like this idea of slowing down and taking a pause and just reflecting on what's important, what matters. So I was actually, the last conversation I had was Marsha, and I mentioned this idea that I learned from you. As you know, coaching, the beauty of coaching is to try to put up a mirror for your client or the person you're coaching. And then I think it's also sometimes you have to put that mirror on yourself, like, you know, and start to find what is it that's happening for me internally.
For sure.
And yeah. And I remember I have had your book for a long time and I read it a few times, but then I realized that you had a chapter in the book, or maybe a section that's titled Always Work on Yourself.
Yeah, I do. I just got to read those words out loud.
So anything that comes up when you read that part, Always Work on Yourself, is that anything that you read that you like, you see from a different way, different angle from the time that you wrote it?
Well, what's shocking to me is how much the words in that book are still as useful now as they were 10 years ago. And I think that, you know, we're in a sort of a long period of time where we're trying to figure out, if everything is changing underfoot all the time, what is stable? Mm-hmm. And so that's our new skill set that we're trying to get as human beings. And as you say, we can over intellectualize and rationalize things and try to like logic it out. And as I think about the idea of always working on yourself, it is one of those stable things. You know, and agile frameworks themselves create stability amid change, which is one of the reasons I love them. Like, you know, everything else is going to hell, but you can definitely count on the fact that there is going to be a sprint review and a retrospective, and we're going to figure out how to make it better, right? And so there's these built-in stabilizers. And actually, this is cool, because I'm just realizing, and maybe this was one of the reasons I really wanted to do the audiobook, it has been a stabilizer for me during this period of time. I've been recording it now for 33 days. Every morning at 0:30, I get up and record for an hour and then do it all over again the next day. And so having that built-in cadence, like the Agile frameworks give us a cadence, has been such a stabilizing factor when in a given day, any of us in our household can be way up or way down. You know, my husband pays attention to the news, and oh my gosh, I mean, at any moment, he could be off the rails with anxiety, you know? So, yeah. So, like, maybe that's the thing to think about is what are the stabilizing factors that people can create for themselves? And they are typically like really small things, but they create a heartbeat or a cadence that you can rely on, even when everything else is changing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually something I've been thinking about a lot lately, is this idea of structure or some sort of a routine. What's a routine that you can rely on that it's going to, like you said, you know, stabilize, you know, your day or your days or time that you, so that not everything is just unpredictable. I think as human beings, we like to have some sort of predictability in some areas of our life. So when the schools are closed, you know, everyone is kind of now, a lot of kids are learning at home, or students are learning at home and online. I think having some sort of a schedule or structure can help give them some sort of predictability. Like if from this time to this time, you then that sort of thing. So yeah, you're the cadence or some cycle, we're doing this every week or every couple of weeks, gives us some sort of ways to handle the unpredictable.
Yeah. And then I would say on top of that, add in the inspect and adapt loop. Because let's say you create that stability and it's working really well for like the first 2 months, and all of a sudden your kids are like crazy, like this doesn't seem to be working. Well, then inspect and adapt and see what needs to change. Because anything will work, but not forever.
Yeah.
And some things become empty rituals. And some things need to be tweaked. So yeah, I like the idea of creating stability, but don't let it calcify would be my advice.
So again, that paradox of having some sort of stability, but at the same time change when things are not working. And that's where sometimes the struggle happens, is whether individuals or people we work with or even ourselves or in organizations, they wanna pick. We either like have some sort, we have to define everything. Everything has to be you know, set in stone. Or everything is just like, you know, chaos, you know, whatever, like let things happen. I took improv classes last year, and even in improv, there is some sort of preparation. You have to, you prepare and then you improvise, and they'll let go of preparation, but you still have to do some preparation. So it's the same thing. You know,
same thing with agile frameworks, maybe the same thing about how we need to arrange how our households work. Because in the US, at least, it's pretty clear that we're going to be stuck together in our houses for a while to come. At least it is to me. And so like what are, I love this idea. Like take the notion of what makes agile frameworks work and apply it to your life and your and the people in your house. So one of the things I'm thinking about right now is exactly as you say, there is preparation there, and I think about this in agile frameworks, there are structures, just enough, not too much, not too little, I mean just enough to create constraints for giving the chance of arising the behaviors we want. Right, so what would that be in your household? What would be the minimum viable structure or the minimum viable stability or something like that that you would create for your household? And then on a regular cadence, inspect and adapt. Because if you don't make yourself stop on a regular cadence, like clockwork, and inspect and adapt, you'll just, I don't know, my experience is you just, you know, go into one sort of so-so practice after another, and pretty soon people don't do it and just falls apart.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what's the minimum viable stability?
Yeah. That's a good question to inquire about. What's the minimum structure? What's the minimum stability that you need? And everyone is going to have different,
of course,
different minimum, I guess, is a relative to it. So anything else that we want to explore? What, you know, anything on your mind that you want to share?
I think what I'd like to really leave people with, since we have been in this terrain of working with what is, which is pretty challenging, leave people with a practice I have that might be useful. I have found myself having a lot of dark thoughts about the human species and where we're headed and all that. And I would have a beautiful meal, for example. This is when we were still going out to restaurants. I would have a beautiful meal, for example, and I would think to myself, you better enjoy this. Who knows when? I mean, who knows if this is going to last forever? And those thoughts lodged in my body, and I've gained about, I don't even know how much weight, but a lot. I weigh more now than when I delivered my daughter. So the thing I've been trying lately, and that has helped me a lot, actually, is when I have a thought like that, to replace it. And the one I came up with, you would come up with your own, or maybe steal this one if it works. But the one I came up with is simply this: humans are resilient.
Mm.
So when I have a thought like that, I say cancel, cancel. And then I say humans are resilient. And we are. I mean, we're still here.
Yeah. Yeah. This idea, like, it's almost like catching some negative thought and turning it into a positive thought or reframing it to look at it from a different perspective.
Yeah.
And that's usually a good way when you know, we feel stuck is to figure out, okay, what's a different angle or different way to look at this? But yeah, I love that. This is humans are resilient. Like,
yeah, I mean, I like it because it's not like, oh, everything is going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't necessarily buy into that, but I can buy into the fact that no matter what comes, humans are resilient, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And we're also quite beautiful. I mean, humans can be incredibly beautiful. And when we come together and work together, especially, it be like,
yeah, it's, there's a lot of different areas, domains, that kind of point to the same thing, you know, having some sort of work on yourself, always work on yourself, and at the same time, try to connect with the others and just to bring, you know, build on each other's work as well. So like, it's, you know, it's almost like the solitude and community type of thing. You're going between the two areas. And that, I think that's what will continue keeping us resilient and figure things out, because you can figure it out on your own and we need to connect and keep the building on the community, on each other's ideas. So I want to continue. I know we're coming to the end of this conversation here.
Yeah.
But yeah, I appreciate all the insights and thoughts, and I can't wait to listen to your book in the audio format.
Yeah, well, there's going to be some fun stuff in it too that's not in the print format. I'm recording, this is apropos of our conversation. I'm recording a bunch of bonuses, and one of them is a daily mindfulness practice.
Mm.
And it's related to aphorisms that help people adopt agile enabling mindsets.
Mm.
So like each day there's a different aphorism to repeat in your mind, and I lead you through it. And I have loved recording those. I recorded the first of them this morning. And from that, I got the idea of like, okay, if that's Monday, then what's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday? So that is fun. I'm in a very creative mode right now because that's brand new content.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear it. Yeah, if you have links, let me know. I'll put it in the notes for this episode.
Oh, and, yeah. Yeah, maybe we can direct people to all the behind the scenes shares. I have one page that has all of them on it. So yeah, we'll do that.
Absolutely. Well, Lisa, thank you very much. Again, it was a pleasure, and I really enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah, I really appreciate the depth of your presence and your ability to go lots of different places. You have a really refined and strong range.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. It means a lot.
Hey, thank you for listening. I hope this conversation gave you something to think about or take action on. Remember, take action and get clarity, then repeat.